Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
All right, and if this matters to you, my temperature just updated at 67. I wouldn't want to steer anyone wrong with those few degrees.
Beautiful. Fall.
That's
fall-ish.
Nice.
Really nice out. And actually, it's going to stay that way today, even though it's going to be a little warmer, as Dean said, but the humidity staying low until tonight. Charlie Brennan of The Charlie Brennan Show joining us in Studio B.
Good morning, everybody.
Along with Amy Marks-Kors.
Good morning.
And Brad Young with Harris Dowell Fisher & Young.
Hey, Debbie.
All right, I think all of us can probably attest that we have seen this in action. We don't necessarily need a news story to tell us that this is so. But the number of people killed by drivers running red lights has hit a 10-year high. AAA is urging drivers and pedestrians to use caution at traffic signals. In 2017, which is the latest that figures are available, 939 people were killed by vehicles blowing through red lights. It's the highest death toll since 2008, 28% higher than 2012. Charlie, why do you think so many people are ignoring or not seeing red lights? And is it time to talk about red light camera enforcement again?
Well, probably not. You know, the Supreme Court ruled that unconstitutional, so that's not going to happen. That was the Beavis Shock, Hugh Eastwood, and my case out of Moline Acres, and a case here in St. Louis. I think it was the Ferguson effect. I think police officers stopped enforcing things. It was really clear. I mean, you can run these red lights. You don't get pulled over for that. You don't get pulled over for expired tags. You don't get pulled over for U-turns. Now, I say that, and now I'm going to give you a mixed signal, because I was actually telling this to a guest of mine that I was bringing down to the station this past Friday. I said, nobody gets pulled over in this town now. And then while driving to UMSL later that afternoon, we saw a uniformed representative of the Normandy, Missouri Police Department pull someone over on Florissant Avenue. And then this past Monday, actually saw a state highway patrol car pull someone over on 6440 in Frontenac. And I said, wow, I haven't seen that in a long time. The guy must have been lost. But I think, honestly, just people, police officers, at least in this area, have said it's not our priority. And I think people know that, and they're running the red lights.
These are, I should point out, nationwide statistics, though.
I know. I understand that. I'm just saying what I know locally.
Brad?
Well, if you want to talk about a nationwide trend, I mean, clearly, at least from my perspective, a lot of it's distracted driving. We've all been driving, and we've seen people who are texting while they're driving. I looked out today. I saw a guy. I'm not making this up. He was reading the newspaper this morning. I saw it driving in. So
was it Charlie?
It was not. Well, I can't say whether it is or it isn't, because Beavis Shock, you know, I don't want to get in trouble with him. But the point being is that we're all distracted, and we see that driving, at least in our minds, a lot of times is a waste of time. And we could be doing something else because we're obsessed with multitasking. And so we're distracted. I think that's a lot of it. What I want to know locally, though, is whether or not some of that distracted driving is because people are calling in on the wine line. I'm not sure. I'm not sure what effect that may have. We'll have to look at studies for that.
Yeah, I feel nationwide, it's narcissism. Everybody thinks that their time is more important than your time. People don't want to wait. I have sat at, you know, like left turn signals, and you see one car go where it's questionable, right? Where like the light is yellow, it turns red as soon as they turn, and then three more cars go because nobody has the time to wait around, and they're not going to stop. They need to get to where they're going. So I do think an increasingly narcissistic society has something to do with it. And also the area, because here, you know, in the city, you're right, you don't see people pulled over as often. But I do know from personal experience, and I love the Wildwood Police Department, the Chesterfield Police Department, They're writing tickets. They're pulling a lot of people over.
I will say, how often
might have set a record.
How often have you gone through an orange and you, or maybe slight red, and you say to yourself, "Wow, I just eked through that. I just got through." And then you look in your rearview mirror, and three cars follow you through.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah, yes. I don't think it's the Ferguson effect as much as distraction and narcissism. Yeah. And Amy and Megan McBride and I yesterday during the commercial break were complaining and, yes, and trading stories about how many times, I mean, it's not just stoplights, it's stop signs. I was at Grand and Arsenal one day and I had a green and I was going to turn left, but there was an ambulance coming through the red light at the intersection and two cars went right in front of the ambulance through because they had the green. Mm. They were like, whatever. They just went right in front of the ambulance, right in front of me. I couldn't believe how blatant it was they clearly thought they were more important than an ambulance.
Don't forget, Senate Bill 5 limited the amount of money that a city or town in the state of Missouri can collect from these traffic violations and offenses to 20% of the city's budget. And there was, let's face it, a reality. Cities were incentivized to write these tickets in the past. They're not now, because over 20%, the money goes to somebody else. And there's no doubt that ticket revenue is way down. When the revenue is down, people learn that. They say, you know, it's like the guy who knows that the police won't chase him. And so they speed away from the police and they basically are not caught. That's the world we're living in right now.
Maybe in other communities, but it's 16 years of living in the city and I don't know if I've ever seen a cop pull somebody over for going through a red light. So I'm not sure that's changed in the city. It's 8:39, traffic and weather together next. It's 8:42, running on empty as opposed to running red lights. I'm Debbie Monterey, along with Amy Markscores, Brad Young, and Charlie Brennan. This is an interesting story, and since we have our legal beagle in studio with us, we'll ask Brad Young about this case. A homeless man who begs for money at the corner of Lindbergh and 55 is suing St. Louis County after police have given him 38 tickets. Those 38 tickets are for breaking the law against soliciting. Now, the man, Robert Fernandez, he's in his mid-40s. He is hoping to prove St. Louis County is violating his constitutional right of free speech. Do you have a constitutional right to beg for money?
You know, Debbie, with all due respect to Beavis Shock, I think he's wrong on this case, and I'll tell you why. The Supreme Court has, for years, decades, has established that there are tiers of protection for speech. So, for example, political speech is at the highest tier of protection. Religious speech is at the very top. But commercial speech is at the very bottom rung of the protection list. So, for example, that's why you can't see cigarette ads on television. It's not free speech because it's commercial speech and it can be regulated. So if you want to break it down, and jokes aside, whenever someone is begging for money, that's in essence commercial speech. They're saying, here, give me money, which is the essence of commercial speech. So at that point, the level of protection is at the absolute lowest, and governments can and are empowered to regulate commercial speech in a way that benefits the community. So taking all that into consideration, again, with all due respect to Beavis Shock, when I look at this, the court is going to say this is commercial speech and it can be regulated.
Amy?
Well, and I have a question about that as well, especially when it's maybe a more aggressive, begging for money. I've gone to a local coffee shop. I would sit outside and there was a woman and then also a man that were there daily, constantly asking for money, telling their story. And, you know, I would give money a couple times and then it was so bothersome and they would be so aggressive that I stopped going to that coffee shop. At what point is it a nuisance issue as well where they're asking for money on a city street or in a parking lot, but it's bothering the customers where the customers don't want to go anymore?
Well, that's when it swerves from speech into activity. I mean, that was the focus of the Supreme Court decision that decided that burning the American flag was speech, not an activity, because it was primarily a political point and less so of an activity. But what you're describing is mostly an activity, the aggressiveness, the bothering you, the mm-hmm. harassment, that's all activity more than speech, and it can be regulated at that point. Now, I think a better argument for Beavis Shock would be to argue that if people would do some activity in exchange for money, I mean, I don't want to draw this comparison too far, but that's how dancers, exotic dancers, get around the issues, because they are performing an artistic expression in exchange for money. And in this instance, it would be a better argument to say they're doing some activity in exchange for money rather than speech, because speech is at the lowest level of protection.
Well, I hope Beavis is wrong in this case, because I do believe in that broken windows theory by James Q. Wilson and others, and that is that if you have little things like that going on in a neighborhood, it makes people nervous, it puts mm-hmm. people off, and it makes people like, I bet you stopped going to that coffee shop. Is that what you're saying?
I did. I mean, and they were pretty aggressive, to the point where, and it was so sad because one woman had her child, but the child would walk up and start like touching my computer, like, you know, typing on my computer. And I was like, you know, I'm sorry, I'm trying to work. And then she would tell her story again. And I felt bad. I wanted to do more for them, but I stopped going.
Yeah. And if you don't patrol those little things, it seems like a small little thing, it leads to lost businesses for the businesses. I mean, that's all there is to it.
Well, what if, Brad, based on what you said, Beavis said that, you know, the guy has a sign that says, you know, he's homeless, give him money, and that is free speech, and he, you know, not unlike any other placard or something you would hold up. So what if he changed his sign to be something political? Because the courts have upheld that, yeah, you know, rich people can give money,
okay.
It's like, and it's free speech.
Where I come from in Cleveland, Ohio, there's a suburb that says you can put up a, you know, political sign, but they regulate the real estate signs, and you cannot put up a home for sale sign in your front yard.
Right. I mean, that would be a better argument if he had a sign that said, you know, give me $1 to impeach Trump, or give me $5 for Botox for Nancy Pelosi, you know, something like that. You know, that would at least bring it under the umbrella of political speech. And it would be a better argument than the commercial speech argument of saying, give me money.
All right. We're going to take a break. It's 8:48. Round 3 of OT on the way on The Voice of St. Louis. Oh, a little journey there to kick off round 3 of OT. Brad Young, Charlie Brennan, Amy Marks Kors, I'm Debbie Monterey. All right, here's an interesting one. Lynn Starkey worked at Roncalli High School in Indianapolis for nearly 40 years. However, this past May, the Roman Catholic School found out that the guidance counselor was married to a woman, and they fired her. So she is suing the school and the Archdiocese of Indianapolis, claiming in part that they discriminated against her on the basis of her sexual orientation. The school's principal notified her that her contract wouldn't be renewed, stating in a letter that civil unions are in violation of her contract and contrary to the teaching of the Catholic Church. So after 40 years, Amy, is that an appropriate firing?
Well, there's a couple aspects to this, and again, I'm glad we have our legal expert in, Brad Young of Harris, Dell, Fisher & Young, because I have a couple questions. But my first takeaway is I do think the emphasis, I believe, was on her marriage, not on her sexual orientation. From what I've heard of Catholic teaching, it's less about being gay or not being gay and more about the marriage. And with a religious organization, religious freedom, it makes sense to me that legally you should have the right to employ people who promote and abide by, to the best of their ability, your religion's teaching. At the same time, with the massive sex abuse scandal that has been going on in the Catholic Church and the way it has been covered up for years, it feels a little tone deaf for them to be pointing a finger right now.
Charlie?
Not only tone deaf, but what moral authority does the church have? I mean, after that, really, to enforce something like that. I think that Roncalli was the name of Pope John the 23rd before he became pope, and I think he would be on the enlightened side here, that what two women or two men do in the privacy of their own home elsewhere away from the school would be okay, and I think that eventually the church will get around to that.
Well, Title VII of the Civil Rights Act of 1964 provides a specific exemption for discrimination cases if you're a religious organization. Mm-hmm. So from that perspective, they do have a federal exemption, because even though sex is a protected class, that's always been defined as gender, not sexual orientation. But there are three cases at the Supreme Court this October that will address squarely the issue of whether sexual orientation is or is not covered under the sex category protection under Title VII of the 1964 Civil Rights Act. So we will get clarity on this issue very soon.
Well, and I guess my question too on why the focus is more on the marriage versus her sexual orientation, that she wasn't fired for being gay. She was being fired for being in a gay marriage, because the church, the Catholic Church, has its scriptural outline of what marriage is, and it's based in a biblical understanding, the Catholic Church, of male and female. So that's a church teaching. So does that make a difference?
Yeah, I personally, I see that as a difference without a distinction. I mean, the only reason you would be in that marriage relationship with a same-sex gender would be based upon one's orientation. So I see you're trying to make a distinction between an activity and an identity. I see that, but I think those are so intertwined as to be indistinguishable.
And this is sort of related, I'm assuming, to what you were just talking about, Brad, but Missouri's Attorney General Eric Schmidt was among other Republican attorneys general who signed a U.S. Supreme Court brief outlining positions on whether discriminating against someone because they're gay or transgender violates federal law banning sex discrimination. And Eric Schmidt and other Republican attorneys general say, no, it's not discrimination.
Right. He signed on to an amicus brief for the Supreme Court because they're going to deal with this come October. And that will be one of the major decisions that the Supreme Court decides in the next term.
But that is, he's not, and he is really parsing words here or the law. Schmidt just believes that the 1960s law, which banned discrimination based on sex, does not include your sexual orientation or whether you're trans or LGBT. He thinks another law or amendment has to be made for that to apply.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.